You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to another episode of Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne. I'm with the National Retail Federation, and I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Tony Fontana.
Bill, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. How are things going?
Things are going great. All because I'm really excited about our host today.
Yeah, we are. Well, I'm excited about the host, too. But our guest would happen to be somebody that is probably more widely read and known and certainly an expert in the retail industry. She happens to be the editor of Stores Magazine. And so we're really fortunate to have Susan Retta. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Susan, I've been reading a lot lately about retail, and evidently, brick-and-mortar stores are dead. Is that true?
Not true. I think that right now, while the mainstream media is focused on that headline, that's not the case at all. I think we have to look at how the industry has evolved over the last few years. We have to look at businesses that embraced technology and changed their strategy and businesses that didn't. So if we go back to the few years prior to 2008, when we do know what happened in the world of finance, at that point, retail was a high flyer and there were a lot of retailers opening stores. And now we're at a point in 2017, approaching 2018, when all of those retail leases are coming due. And businesses that haven't evolved with the consumer, haven't addressed the changing consumers' behaviors, and haven't adopted the technology to move their businesses forward, are experiencing some issues. And we will see some store closings. We'll continue to see some throughout 2017. But that is not everything that's happening in retail. There's a lot of excitement going on in retail.
Well, you know, a lot of the store closings that we've seen seem to be in malls. So what's happening to the malls?
Well, I mean, I think the malls are also in a position where they have to evolve. The malls that have stayed updated, stayed cutting edge, introduced technology, developed experiences for the consumer, those malls are doing just fine. And we're seeing that malls that are more hybrid malls that have an outdoor component, those malls are continuing to open. So it's not all bad news. It's, did you change? Did you do what you were supposed to do as a business for years? And if you did, there's still a lot of excitement going on in the mall.
Tony, I think you probably part of the generation that used to hang out at the malls, at the food courts.
That's pretty accurate. Yeah,
I thought so.
Yeah.
What do you think's going on?
I think it's a hurry up and change. I mean, people need to, whether you own a store in a mall, outside of a mall, I think it's just recognizing those trends that you talked about. And if you own a business, you can never adapt quickly enough. At least that's how it seems to me. But at the end of the day, I think retailers are among the top of the list in terms of those that can adapt quickly and those that do it the fastest. You know, seem to, you know, take the most advantage of it.
I want to go to the mall and have a multi-sensory experience. I don't want to just go there, and I don't think shoppers go there specifically with one destination in mind. I want to be excited by what I run into. I want to see new formats, and I want to see the traditional retailers doing different things inside their stores' doors that make me want to come back in as a customer and re-experience over and over.
So let's take a step back. A lot of what we have been talking about so far is covered in Stores Magazine. So tell us a little bit about the content we can find there.
Sure. Well, Stores Magazine is, you know, the official publication of the National Retail Federation, and I'm really proud to be able to say that. But having been with stores for decades, and we'll just leave it there, we're a business publication. We're focusing on the business of retail, and we have a heavy hand on technology. So I think that our content, we cover the gamut from, you know, everything from a merchandising story to a tech story to what I traditionally call our big thumb sucker kind of stories, where we hope that an executive will read the story and be completely engaged by the ideas, the topics, the resources that we've reached out to for feedback, and really talk about a topic in a thorough format.
So kind of in that light, your duties as editor probably are so broad, just you have to stay abreast of what's being talked about out there, position yourself in the magazine as a thought leader. What's that like?
It's fun. I probably spend more time reading than I should, but hours out of my day are spent reading all kinds of things related to retail and then trying to distill from that what would work as content inside of Stores Magazine. What are some of the big trends that are bubbling up? What are some of the ideas that I keep hearing about over and over that may or may not take root? Because I think it's our job as a resource for retailers to talk about new technologies that could take root, new businesses that might be springing up. I've written my share of stories and then thought, oh gosh, I hope they're still in business 8 months from now. And you know what? Whether they are or they aren't, there's still learning to be derived from having talked about them and how their business started and changed.
You talk about trends, and you know, there's no industry, I think, in the world that is more susceptible to trends, not only adapting to them, but actually starting them, than retail. What are the trends that you're seeing that are becoming more and more prevalent? Which are the trends that are kind of dying off?
Well, I mean, in terms of the things that are really bubbling up right now, there are a lot of folks talking about artificial intelligence, and there are so many offshoots of artificial intelligence, but it gets to the heart of better understanding the customer and using technology to do so. With artificial intelligence, we can better personalize. With personalization, you deliver a better experience to the consumer. We're also hearing a lot about virtual reality. As an older consumer, I don't necessarily think I can put on those goggles and enjoy an experience. However, I'm told that when a consumer embraces virtual technology, it really changes the experience of shopping. So I think those are two. I'm also keeping a close eye in the grocery space on what's happening with the meal in a box kind of delivery. I think those are Really, we've seen Blue Apron and HelloFresh and a handful of others come on very strong. And now, just recently, Kroger announced that they're going to get into that business. In every segment of retail, there is innovation and there are new things bubbling up. And, you know, I think that's a good example of it. In terms of trends that are going away, I don't know. I think in our industry, things just continue to evolve and move forward.
Maybe in some cases it's like fashion. It goes out of style, comes back a little bit later, maybe in a different version or format.
Fashion is the ultimate trend.
So each year, Stores Magazine releases its top 100 retailers list. It's probably the most popular piece of content that NRF publishes. Give us an idea of how that list is created.
Sure. Our top 100 retail list is indeed our franchise. And for the last several years, we've partnered with Kantar Retail. And they do the heavy lifting on all of the research. And we look specifically at U.S. retail sales. We try to pull out anything extraneous. We don't report on gasoline sales, or so that we're really getting a clear picture of who succeeded in the past year.
So who's on the top of this year's list then?
Okay, well, the top of the list is no surprise. It's the same company that's been at the top of the list for many, many years now, and it's Walmart. So, you know, Walmart has had some ups and downs, but there's no denying the strength and the power of this company. But other companies that are on the list, some of the ones that are really, we're seeing a lot of mass market retailers. So we have number three is Costco. Number seven is Amazon. Number eight is Target. And then rounding out the top 10, and I could read them to you in sequential order, but what fun would that be? We've got some pairs. So traditional national supermarkets, Kroger is number two, Albertsons number 10. Traditional home improvement retailers, we've got Home Depot at number four, Lowe's at number nine. And on the drugstore front, CVS is number five. Walgreens Boots Alliance is number six. So it's interesting to me that when we look at what's happening across the retail landscape and the power of e-commerce retail, that the only retailer in that top 10 that's an e-commerce behemoth is Amazon. So there's the other non-store retailer that is on the list who's prominent is QVC. Other than that, when you look at the biggest retailers in the United States, they are retailers that have a physical, strong physical presence.
And even those non-store brands are experimenting with their own physical spaces. So the clicks to bricks model is thriving.
It absolutely is. So Bonobos, Warby Parker, and Amazon opening some stores.
That's right.
Let's see what they're going to do. They've already stopped their Amazon Go test. But anybody who is a student of Amazon is wondering what's going on behind the scenes now. What are they learning about that? What kind of research are they trolling through to figure out how they're going to take the best of what was Amazon Go and feed it into their stores? It's just a matter of time.
You know, you've interviewed a lot of retail pioneers, a lot of executives that have taken companies and, you know, that maybe were foundering and then made them very, very successful. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's one that you haven't had the opportunity to interview. It could be somebody that's still in the business or somebody that's left us permanently. Mm-hmm. Who would that be?
Jeff Bezos. I just think that his impact on retail and mostly his view of customer centricity and the culture Amazon has, their corporate agility, all of those pieces make them such an interesting company to me. But any merchant or any chief executive who has an open chair at the boardroom table and says the customer sits there, that's somebody I really care about, because I think that there are a lot of folks who don't think about the customer first. And everything that he has done in that business suggests to me that he thinks about customers, and I have to believe that's a very strong component in Amazon's success.
You know, you mentioned the customer, the consumer. It's changing. I mean, it's constantly changing, mm-hmm. but it's really changing, it seems like. You have a generation coming up now that, you know, they are more immersed in online and understand that more than any other generation previous to that, because there's more offerings, there's more right. opportunities, there's more apps, there's more stores. So what, if you were to look at like Gen Z and the millennials, as they are now making the money that they need in order to, you know, spend more freely, what do you anticipate retailers are doing to respond to that?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, with Gen Z, they're truly the digital natives. They, you know, swipe right from birth.
I actually saw a video of a child in front of a regular TV swiping the TV and just not understanding why the picture wasn't changing. It's just amazing to me.
I recently heard an interview where a number of Gen Z young people, 16 and 17 years old, were on a panel, and they were asked, if you could have the latest iPhone or a new car, which would you choose? 5 out of 6 chose the iPhone. So that is just so, it's such a compelling story about what they value. So, you know, for retailers, I think that that they have to learn how the mobile experience can be blended with what's important to Gen Z. I think they still love to shop. I think they like to go to stores, but their experience in stores and their desire for that, what they experience in a physical store, is probably different than what someone like myself would want out of a physical store. So it's interesting to me that a lot of retailers have invested in bells and whistles in the quest to attract a millennial or a Gen Z. And yet Gen Z just wants to, you know, go in the fitting room and take selfies and share them. That's really what they want to do. And they have that in the power of their hand right there. So I think millennials are an interesting one to watch because they finally do have some money. And I think the challenge for retailers in selling to Gen Z will be finding ways to make their associates more savvy and put more information in their hands and do better training. So all of the pieces that Rise Up is trying to drive toward, because we have a customer who lived on their phones and on the internet and does copious research before going into a store to shop. So when they get there, if their exchange with an associate is not an intelligent exchange, they don't have a reason to stay, and they're going to go back home and order from e-commerce. But if they have that engaging experience, it suddenly changes everything. And then, guess what? They'll go on social media, and they'll tell the world how great you were. So it really behooves retailers to focus on that store associate.
I just read an article that there is a retailer that's beefing up their online component and spending a lot of money doing it. But the thing that struck me the most out of that entire article was the fact that they are hiring more liberal arts majors to work in that part of the business than they are actual technologists. And primary is because they want the experience to be exciting. They want it to be uncomplicated. They want it to be visually stimulating. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you talk about retail jobs as a liberal arts major from a large land-grant university in the Deep South, I like to think there's hope.
I would absolutely agree with you. I mean, let's hope that our universities are producing liberal arts majors that really do have a broad focus on a number of different topics and can have command of things that are interesting in literature and things that are interesting in technology, but can bring those two together. And that's really, as human beings, what we want, to have a social conversation with somebody who's funny, smart, you know, but at the same time knowledgeable. And if you're just a one-trick pony that only can swipe right, maybe you're not who we want.
Yeah, I would even say, in my opinion, it should be a step back from that and thinking back to my high school days where you took, you know, a computer class to learn how to type or things like that. Obviously, the next generation of high school students will have already been very accustomed to typing at home. So integrating that very personal element, which seems to be getting harder for some because they're so engrossed in their phone and technology, and kind of making sure that, like, they all understand the social side of the impact of technology.
Yeah, I don't want to throw my 20-something children under the bus, but when they ask me things like, did I address this letter correctly? I start to wonder about education. But the truth is, they don't write letters. They don't mail bills. They do everything online. So it's just absolutely foreign to them. And, you know, to your point, I don't know very many people who would take a typing class anymore. I didn't do well in it.
I had to. So I got my punishment one year for not doing well in school was I had to go to summer school and I had to take typing. And while all my friends were out having fun, I was stuck in a typing class. Mm-hmm. And I have told my parents that of all of the punishments they gave me for any of my myriad of bad behaviors, that was the best thing they ever could have done for me. I have used when I was in college, and we didn't have personal computers. I used to use my Selectric to type papers in exchange for beer. It worked.
Times have changed. So speaking of typing, Bill asked you about somebody who you would like to write a story about. Can you give us you know, off the top of your head, your favorite story of someone you have written about?
Well, let's see. I have had the privilege of interviewing a number of what NRF used to designate as its gold medal winner. We've kind of tweaked the name now, but they were often people who had founded businesses and built them. So two of my favorite were Charles Lazarus, who founded and built Toys R Us, and what an incredible gentleman he was. And coming to understand that, you know, Toys R Us really started as like a supermarket, and that's what he envisioned, turning a toy store into a supermarket. And he was just an incredible person to meet and interview. And I can say very much the same for Gordon Siegel at Crate & Barrel. Again, founded this business, and the name of the business embodies what he and his wife started, which was crates and putting product on crates and, you know, kind of cross your fingers, say a Hail Mary and hope it works. And look at what Crate & Barrel has become today. But he was such a product-oriented merchant, a true merchant prince in that sense. And I had the opportunity to walk a store with him. And you just, when you see a CEO who's embraced by his associates, regardless of what they were doing, I believe they were getting ready to open a store in the Chicago area. And so they were unpacking product and just, you know, waving, Hey, Gordon, what's this about? You know, and that's a wonderful experience to have. And it truly is what retail's about. It's about product and people and that sense of community and commerce that all comes together.
And I think those kind of stories that you've written, I've also listened to Gordon Siegel on a podcast that I listen to. And I think for my generation and younger ones, you see those types of stores everywhere. So it's so commonplace. You don't really think about the genesis of those companies. Mm-hmm. And reading articles like yours kind of just brings it all home. Like, well, it all started with a dream and an entrepreneurial spirit. So,
absolutely.
You know, you mentioned being able to walk through the store with the CEO, and I've had that opportunity as well. And it's amazing to me to view the store in almost fresh new eyes. Now, the only problem is now when I walk into those stores, I kind of remember what some of the things that they were critical about and some of the things that needed to be changed. And I just want to find the manager and say, hey, before the CEO gets here, you may want to think about that end cap. And so it's both a blessing and a curse.
I know that there are a number of retailers who, gosh, I'm going to take you back. There was a company called Higbee's in Cleveland. They were a department store. And years ago, I worked for a publication that required we spend time with a retailer, and we were not permitted to write about them. We were just there to learn. And the CEO picked me up at the airport and drove me to Higbee's department store, and we walked around and talked with merchants and talked with associates, and they all knew him. It was just completely eye-opening.
Where'd you grow up, Susan?
I grew up on Long Island.
Long Island.
Yes.
So you've seen a lot of retail changes in Long Island.
Yeah, I mean, I think, while I don't see myself as affluent, most people would say Long Island is a pretty affluent area. And so we've had the opportunity to see a lot of high-end retail. And then to, you know, one of the first supermarkets out there is King Cullen, and King Cullen started on Long Island. But then, you know, now as we see the Hamptons develop and we see pop-up shops move to the Hamptons, it's always fun to take a drive out there in the summer and see what's new and different. This year, I just read recently that One Kings Lane will open one of their first physical footprints in a architecturally acclaimed library in the Hamptons. So, on the first floor, they're going to set up room vignettes and allow people to come through and really experience it. And, you know, that's the kind of thing, again, we're seeing a traditional e-commerce pure play figure out how to move into a bricks and mortar type of setting, a physical setting, allow people to touch the product they could only formally see online. And they're doing it in a way that energizes the customer experience and gets the customer excited. You know, that's for me, that's what it comes down to today.
So with these ideas of customer obsession and technology, I'm bringing it back to the top 100 list and trends. Were there any big jumps from companies that are doing these things right or cutting edge that are causing them to grow more quickly, in your opinion?
I have to say that there's nothing that's really popping up for me. I just think that any retailer who has to stay the course on technology will eventually see that jump.
So anything overall surprising about this year's list in terms of the makeup?
I think that that what surprises me about it is the dominance of home goods types of retailers. For a while, you know, you got to go through cycles where mass merchants are stronger and supermarkets are stronger. And right now we're seeing a lot, you know, Wayfair and Home Goods, a division of TJ Maxx, a lot of interest in that area.
Is it possible that you could start a campaign through Stores Magazine that ends the usage of the word omni-channel? I mean, you hear all these expressions. I mean, does that exist anymore, omni-channel? I mean, it's just retail, isn't it?
It is retail. I don't know. My good friend at IDC, Leslie Hand, actually coined the term omni-channel. So I'm very careful about that. I like Leslie, and I would like her legacy to be omni-channel. You know, inside of retail, we all know what omni-channel means. But you're right, we have come up with many euphemisms for it, from unified commerce to circular commerce. The bottom line is that none of that matters to the consumer. And that's, I think, at the heart of where you're going with this. Retailers today need to understand that the consumer sees you as a brand, as a retail chain, and they really don't care about the silos/channels of business in which you operate. They expect that their experience is going to be the same wherever they interface with you. And that's the challenge retail faces today.
And the people say, amen. So, Susan, this is a part of the program that you weren't prepared for. But it's called Rapid Fire. So I'm going to ask you, and Tony's going to ask you a few questions. What we want you to do is to come up with an answer, the first thing that pops in your head. So are you ready?
It's going to be scary.
All right. I'm ready to be scared. Tony?
When you're not reading Stores, what magazines are your favorites?
I read Real Simple, and I read a lot of design magazines.
What is the one app that you cannot live without?
Amazon.
If you had $500,000 to invest right now, what company would you choose?
I am in love with Rachel Shechtman's Story in New York, and I would back that company in a heartbeat.
Sounds like Long Island bias to me. Anyway.
You all of a sudden walk out of this room, find $100. Where are you going shopping?
I would probably end up at one of the Gap chains, Banana Republic or Gap.
What's the best career advice you've ever received?
It's not brain surgery. I think sometimes we all take ourselves too seriously. And I'm included in that in a big way. Sometimes you just have to step back and say it's good or it's good enough and move on.
Podcasts aren't brain surgery either, but we've run out of time. So I just want to thank you, Susan Rutta. You've done a fantastic job. Stores Magazine is great, and we enjoy reading it every month. Tony, it's always good spending time with you.
You as well, Bill. Great talking to you today, Susan.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you will look for more information about the topics that we've discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. And don't forget to subscribe and share the show with your colleagues and friends. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time on Retail Gets Real.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.